Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Ukraine's recent battlefield successes with the support of NATO may change the course of the conflict. Russia's special military operation launched on February 24th has been slow and methodical. Nonetheless, the Kremlin has made it clear it will achieve its security goals. Does that mean an escalation of the conflict? Crosstalking the current situation in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Ritter in Dalmar. He's a former intelligence officer and United Nations weapons inspector. In Washington, we have Michael Malouf. He is a former Pentagon security policy analyst. And in London, we cross to Adriel Consante. He is founder of AK Consulting and a foreign affairs analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Scott, let me go to you first here. The title of this program is Catalyst. Okay, what do I mean by that? We had these recent successes on the part of the Ukrainians in the conflict. We're not expecting that, but then in retrospect, maybe a lot of people shouldn't be surprised. On the back of it, we had a part of the energy grid in Ukraine go out. Was that a message? We don't know. Will it continue? We don't know. But over the last week or so, is this a catalyst to go from the special military operation to something else? And we've talked about this before. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I think you're right. Back in May, I was widely chastised for daring to say that the provision of $53 billion worth of assistance by the United States to Ukraine, on top of billions of dollars of assistance provided by Europe, NATO, and the establishment of what I called strategic depth. That means the opening up of NATO facilities in Europe to train Ukrainian forces on the equipment being provided was a game changer. And we saw the game change. I also said that given this new reality, 200,000 men just isn't enough to accomplish the objectives of the special military operation beyond the liberation of the Donbas. I've always said that that will happen, and it's going to happen. But denazification requires, pressing a military campaign beyond the Donbas. It requires the destruction of the Ukrainian military, the destruction of the political viability of neo-Nazi political parties and elements in Ukraine. And 200,000 men isn't going to do that. 200,000 men was insufficient to hold the territory that Russia had withdrawn to after phase one. Kharkov was always problematic. Again, in May, I pointed out that the Russians were unable to stop repeated Ukrainian counteroffenses. Ukrainians were probing, penetrating, and the Russians had insufficient force to do that. And whenever they redeployed force up to push back the Ukrainians, it caused an operational pause elsewhere. Russia needs more men. That's the end of the story. So, there's going to have to be if Russia is going to insist that it's going to fulfill all the stated objectives and they're serious about denazification and demilitarization, then at some point in time, Russia is going to have to change the nature of the game. They're going to have to respond to the Ukrainian NATO initiative and put in more resources.
Okay. Michael, basically the same question to you. One of the things that's, at least I've come across, is that a lot of the equipment now the Ukrainian army is using is provided by NATO here. That tells us a number of things. The Ukrainian arsenal has basically been exhausted, destroyed, and now it's relying very much so on NATO countries, particularly the United States. We had President Zelensky on CNN admitting without American support, he wouldn't be able to continue his campaign here. So, I mean, this is a game changer. And I have to say, to be honest with you, there's been a lot of frustration in the country that I currently live in about why isn't the gloves being taken off? Again, the reason why I'm calling this program Catalyst, because this is a catalyst to step up the game, because no one likes a long conflict, okay? They want resolution, okay? And if they can't get it, then they're going to have to figure out something else to do. I'm being very blunt here. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think it. We're going to see an escalation. It's going to be a type of escalation that will be more targeted. The counteroffensive by the Ukrainians was one that was purposeful, brought on by tremendous intelligence assistance, and a deception approach that forced a lot of the Russian troops to go in one direction in order to achieve Kharkiv and to take that area back, which is critical to the Ukrainians. And the type of assistance that is occurring now is not only arms, which it's going to require more, and that's going to be questionable as to whether they can ultimately deliver without increasing our own home production capabilities. But also the intelligence, the Ukrainians up until now have been reluctant to share with the U.S. its strategies and approaches and operationally. Consequently, they have relented, it seems, and are using the intelligence that the U.S. supplies to mount these counteroffenses very effectively. And the way the United States, it looks like what the United States is doing is working with a dedicated group of Pentagon types, and either out of Pentagon Central or out of Germany, and using a series of fusion centers, which we actually began doing during the Bosnian War, in which you help the commander in the field with an array of data mining to be able to move troops and assess criteria almost instantly and redirect very rapidly and be able to look for critical choke points. And that appears to be what has been coming from the West so far.
Well, I don't know. Let me go to you in London. I mean, Scott has already said it. Michael has already said it. So why don't we just all say it in unison here? This is a NATO war against Russia. Okay, this is what it's gotten down to. And Russia has to react in kind. Okay, NATO is allowing this campaign to continue. And we haven't seen destruction of command and control centers in Ukraine. That needs to be on the agenda here. Essentially, this slow walking hasn't worked, okay? It's not going to work, and it's it gets down to a point where who's going to be exhausted by this here. It's very frustrating knowing that Russia has committed 10% of its military to this campaign. Adriel.
Well, I obviously agree with my predecessors, and I agree with you, Peter, but I would also add that this so-called limited operation was deemed to fail from the very beginning. If we ought to believe that the United States or the collective West was intending to allow Russia to continue with the limited operation in Ukraine, we must be illogical. I mean, obviously, the goodwill of the Russian president and his adherence to the international law was deemed or perceived in the West as a weakness. And obviously, we know that this could be done, within a few days. I mean, the blitzkrieg, aimed at the Ukraine by, destroying the regime in Ukraine by destroying the governmental and civil infrastructure, which would prevent the West from equipping the Ukrainian forces and Nazi forces, which are fighting Russians on the ground. Also, I would like to add the fact that this will further escalate, as we all agree, but the further escalation and the continuation of this conflict is bearing a certain risk of the nuclear exchange, because how long the West might be, brazen, as the report in the Hill magazine recently in the beginning of this month, was titled "How the United States is becoming more brazen in its support for the Ukraine." I mean, they clearly laid out the plan and. In my understanding, it was a blunder on the Kremlin side, because the Kremlin at the very beginning was pretty clear that once the United States and NATO will join by helping the Ukrainian government, Ukrainian forces on the ground, which they do, they will be perceived as a side to the conflict. But slowly and surely they were testing the ground, and they were moving further without meeting any consequences from the Russian side. And we also have to bear in mind that still Kremlin is more interested in being a reliable partner to the West by still supplying the energy to Europe.
We'll get to that in the second half of the program. Real quickly, Scott, it's been explained to me, I don't know if it's correct, that this offensive that the Ukrainians are pursuing, it's more like the Battle of the Bulge, and the Ukrainians are the Germans. Do you get my drift?
I get your drift. I disagree. Look, it's time just to say that the NATO-US-Ukraine effort was a tremendous success. And it is probably more successful than the Russians anticipated. The Ukrainians, and I agree with you, this is how I describe it. You know, prior to this offensive, Russia was facing a Ukrainian army that was equipped and trained by NATO. This offensive was fought by a NATO army that's right. manned by Ukrainians. End of story. This is a NATO army. It uses NATO tactics. It uses NATO intelligence, NATO command and control, NATO logistics. There's a heavy influx presence of international forces, thousands of them, and there's advisors at every level attached to the Ukrainian staff. This is a NATO army, and they hit the Russians in their weakest part. And look, Russia's going to have to answer some serious questions. The defense that exists in the Kharkov was non-doctrinal. It was ridiculous. It was absurd. And when you go up against a NATO army, which is what they did, not a Ukrainian army, a NATO army, you are decisively defeated. Now, Russia chose to trade to trade space for men, et cetera. But if this was going to be the Battle of the Bulge, then we need Patton's Third Army to come in and crush the Ukrainians. Where is the First Guards Tank Army? What happened to them?
Okay.
These are questions the Russians have to answer.
That's right. Okay, gentlemen, we have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the current situation in Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the current situation in Ukraine. Okay, let's go to Michael in Washington. Since there is a NATO war against Russia and a collective West economic warfare against Russia, I think it's time. It's September, middle of September here in Russia. Winter comes to us first, okay? It's getting a bit cool. It's going to get cooler and cooler and cooler. I think it's a good time to cut all energy supplies from Russia to the West. Full stop. Michael.
Yeah, I think there's, as a result of this counteroffensive, I think Russia has learned a lot. Just as the Ukrainians want to applaud this initial success of it, it also gives lessons to the other side. And the Russians now see a way to adjust as a consequence. And what we're going to probably see is a series of events at various levels and on various fronts. Number one is cutting back on energy completely. Ukraine and that area, as I understand it, will be going through an initial rainy season, which will create a lot of mud. And then you have the freeze. And that's going to allow more tactics in the use of artillery, tanks, and be able to bring on a much larger force as a consequence. Secondly, the Ukrainians had an initial success with this counteroffensive, but how do they sustain it? That's going to be a question that the NATO people are having to deal with now. And I think this is where the Russians can probably score by hitting the supply lines, hitting and going much more robust in their approach, hitting those supply lines and cutting off electricity and doing cyber attacks. It just ramp up the cyber attacks. And that's going to hurt communications tremendously. And you're going to see, I think, in the coming weeks and months, a Russian counteroffensive, a counteroffensive, let's put it that way.
Well, Adriel, I have to express my impatience with all of this because There's a lot of capacity. Have we seen any strategic bombing, for example? Not that I want to see that kind of level of destruction, but this conflict has to come to an end, and Russia has the means to do it. What is the West going to do? Sanction Russia? I mean, it's getting a bit boring, okay? And there's a frustration in the country that I live right now. It's time to wrap this thing up. And I'll say it for the first time here. There needs to be regime change in Kyiv, okay? You can't deal with these people. Continuing this constant slow walking of the conflict achieves nothing for anyone at the end of the day. And there's enormous amount of suffering on the ground. Go ahead in London.
I mean, this is completely understandable what you just said, and I agree. There's no point in having any discussions with the current regime, and I think that Russia somehow dropped ball in 2014 when the Washington installed the anti-Russian government. There's no point in discussing anything with Zelensky because he's just a puppet. I mean, he's taking his orders from the Washington D.C. and from London. And I mean, now in the United Kingdom, we have Liz Truss, who became a prime minister, and who during the before being elected explicitly said that she's willing to use the nuclear weapons. I mean, how outrageous is that? I mean, most of the people were clapping who were gathered in the studio, and these people are not taking into the account the consequences of this escalatory language. Indeed, Russia has to do something before it's too late, because you're asking us, I mean, what can be done further? I mean, I'm not sure whether Washington will accept the defeat of the Ukrainian government. I mean, we know from the day one, we are familiar with the Wolfowitz doctrine that explicitly described the U.S. hegemony, and we know that the U.S. military industrial complex needs to have Russia as the enemy number one. So what is else to be discussed? I mean, obviously, Russia and President Vladimir Putin wanted to be a respectable partner within the Western world order, but this has failed. I mean, this has failed. Russia will never be accepted as an equal within the current world order, which is, crumbling before our own eyes as we, experiencing the rise of BRICS and Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting that will take place later this week. I think that these illusions in Russia have to be dropped. That Russia will be accepted in Europe or in the broader West. It will not.
Okay, Scott, in Afghanistan, it was always said that, you have the clocks, but we have the time. How would you use that phrase in this current situation? Who's got the clocks? Who's got the time? Scott.
Russia's got both. I think it's time we got to take a step back for a second and understand that this is a war, and war is an extension of politics by other means, which means that by singularly focusing on the battlefield, we're missing the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. I'm going to point out two allies that are going to come and get that are coming to Russia's side. First one is General Mudd. The Mudd season is coming, as my colleague mentioned. And with this comes an operational reality. So I don't see Russia undertaking a significant counteroffensive in the short period of time. That's too risky. The best thing Russia can do right now is to retake the Donbass, and they're going to do that. And I think that's what we're going to see for the rest of this military campaigning season. Then comes General Winter, and this is where it gets interesting, because General Winter isn't about freezing the ground, tanks moving. General Winter is about Russia breaking the will of the West to support Ukraine. This is where the West put all of its chips in to crush the Russian economy through sanctions, through denying Russia access to international markets with energy, and the West has failed. We can never forget that. Russia is winning on the international energy market. Russia is winning economically, internationally, and the victory is going to be sealed this winter when all of the politicians in Europe who have been clamoring to provide Ukraine with support are going to be swept out of power by revolutionary movements of angry constituents who are freezing to death, who are hungry, or seeing their economies collapse. And this is the greatest ally Russia has, because come spring, when Russia is ready to carry out, after they've secured the Donbass, Russia is ready to move on with regime change, whatever you want to call it, demilitarization, denazification, the geopolitical picture will have changed. I don't think you're going to be seeing Ukraine with so many allies. I think you're going to see Europe and NATO divided, fractured. I think you're going to see the United States with a new political reality after November. And now Russia will be better positioned to act on all the lessons that they've learned. And I agree, they're learning a lot of lessons. They will take the winter time to reorganize, re-equip, reassess. Come spring, and I know you want this over quick, this isn't about the battlefield. This is about geopolitics. This is about Russia repositioning itself in the world with China, with India, with other nations. This is about the destruction of American hegemony, the weakening of the U.S. dollar dominance. That's the bigger picture that Russia's playing into. And you don't want to sacrifice that by carrying out a precipitous military action in Ukraine that could, first of all, you can't win without increasing the number of troops. You have a choice of either a slow buildup of forces through increased contracting, et cetera, or general mobilization. General mobilization is suicide. If Russia generally mobilizes, their economy will not be as strong as it is right now, and they're going to lose all the advantages they have. So I just say, look, Ukraine won a battle.
They're
losing the war. They're losing the war.
Michael, basically the same question, because, I mean, it gets down to a point of exhaustion. And given how, Europeans are, unfortunately for the Europeans, they've just forgotten what war is like. They've become very, very soft here. I mean, they like their prosperity, and they had prosperity because they had cheap Russian energy. That's no longer the case. And they're going to pay dearly for ending that relationship with Russia, because Russia has no reason to go back to it. Plenty of people, the West doesn't want fossil fuels. Fine, don't sell it to them, okay? The rest of the world wants to continue building their societies in a sovereign way. They'll take the energy. I think to date, year on year, Russia's made, Gazprom's made 38% more profit year on year. And that's with all of these sanctions here. So I guess it's a war of attrition, but I think Scott is right. We have to think in a much broader scale what that attrition is. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I would agree with Scott's assessment from the geopolitical aspects. And time is on Russia's side. And I think that they're going to use a combination of the elements. They're also going to use the fracturing within the NATO countries because of the harsh realities that they're going to have to be facing this winter. And they're already beginning to squirm and scream about it. And the U.S. is not going to be able to fulfill them and backfill them. And then at the same time, continue on with a robust production of any kind to resupply lost arms, half of which probably aren't going to the Ukrainian forces anyway. And another portion is probably being blown up. So it's a question of attrition. And I think with a combination of using a long winter that's expected in the region, combined with altering tactics, the Russians can sit back and just bleed them by
all right,
a thousand cuts.
Hang on, Michael, let me give Adriel. I want to give Adriel the last 30 seconds. Go ahead, in London.
Well, here in the West, they say that Russia lost the Europe. But I would say that instead of, indeed, it lost Europe, but it won the world.
Well, I think I'm going to write that on a post-it and put it on my refrigerator and my wallet. It's going to be a good line I'll use in the future. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Delmore, and in London. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.